offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, joining you live from our studios at Prashantanilayam, this is Prem, and with me is Arvind. And we are here to continue our satsang on the book Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. It's been a beautiful journey. Many concepts, many topics are being discussed here. And even as we go through these conversations, we also pitch in with our thoughts, pitch in with what we have learned in Swami's presence. And we hope that this journey is as fruitful to all of you as it is for us. The last week, there was a very interesting discussion, and as we often see, many, many topics are discussed one after the other. And the one which we stopped with was when a devotee asked about criticism and how wrong or right is it to criticize others. And the answer that we would probably expect is Swami would say that criticism is wrong and criticism is bad altogether. But the answer that Swami gives is very interesting. Swami says that it is not wrong altogether, but it has to be deeply considered and one has to think hard before one criticizes the other person. And we had discussed about that as to how we all are here to improve each other. And I think one of the ways by which we do that is sometimes we don't see our own flaws, and those people who are selfless and those people who are keen on our welfare, I think if they criticize us, I think that is for the benefit of us, that we are able to look at our flaws from another point of view and able to change it. And I think in that sense, Swami had made it very clear that it is not completely wrong, but one has to very slowly and carefully consider what one is talking about and then say it. And I think that is the point that we stopped in. Again, there's going to be a different theme that is going to be discussed here, or different sets of themes that Swami is going to discuss here. Before we go into all of that, let's invite Arvind to join all of us. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem, and Sai Ram to all our listeners. You know, Prem, you just said that this is a satsang wherein we are reading out from the book Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba and adding our own thoughts. I was thinking that the thoughts that we add is so heavily dependent on the circumstances, the deshakala paristhiti, as they say, that we are going through in our own lives. That is why, you know, when we ourselves hear our afternoon satsangs from, say, 3 years back or 4 years back, as we listen to what is the text in the book, whether it's Ramkatha Rasa Vahini or Bhagavata Vahini, possibly when we currently hear to our reading of the text, different thoughts arise in our mind, and this happened, that's why I'm saying. And when I listen to what we possibly said at that point in time, it looks like, hey, wow, that's a very interesting insight. This is possibly because 3 years ago or 4 years ago when we were doing that, we were in a different frame of mind compared to what we are now. And because of this, it just made me better understand the meaning of Swami's teachings being universal. You know, this same text, when we go through in a different circumstance or different situation, it will occur to us in one manner. And now when we go through, it will occur to us in another manner. Because, you know, it is no secret. The whole world knows, because the whole world is fighting against the current coronavirus pandemic. This time when I was preparing for the satsang, and as I read through what Swami was speaking with Hislop and on different themes, none of them that come close to even an epidemic, I still got so many insights and messages which could be very, very, very useful for us, for bolstering us, for making us feel happier, better and stronger in our faith in these trying circumstances. That is what makes it so amazing. That is what makes all of these teachings so universal, that irrespective of the situation we are in, it gives us thoughts to delve into. It gives us insights that are so very useful. And therefore, we must truly be grateful to Swami for this magnificent work that he has, you know, gifted us through Dr. John Hislop. And it's not just about this book, you know, whether it's Sathya Sai Speaks or anything, I'm sure we'll experience this. And that, for that, you know, I really felt so grateful to Swami. Swami, thank you. Even though it is not particularly like, you know, of late we hear a lot of people asking, what has Swami said about epidemics? And I was thinking, Swami, what should we have a special satsang on, what should be done during epidemics? But, you know, reading this, I just felt there are so many things for us to learn and incorporate in our lives, which will help us even in the current scenario. So that was really very exciting and thrilling.
No, absolutely. In fact, even as you were saying that, a fleeting thought that occurred to me is, you know, given that everybody is thinking about this, are we supposed to do something with regards to that? Swami has spoken so much about personal hygiene. Swami has spoken about suchi or cleanliness, the importance of inside and outside cleanliness, which is a very important topic for the present. But what occurred to me is, I think we are already having an overload of, you know, what has to be done and what is happening around the world. I think it is much better now to take our mind off it and place it on Swami as much as we can. And as you rightly said, there's always enough in Swami's message to provide lessons for whatever situation we are in. So we really do not have to tailor-make what Swami has said. In fact, in a couple of few days before we go into that, there was this old letter of Swami that Swami had written to the students of the Vrindavan campus that's going around. Imagine, this must have been a letter that Swami wrote in the 80s or maybe even in the 70s. But what Swami says there is so profound, and people who are reading it now is like, oh yeah, that's exactly what we have to listen to. And probably we'll just, I just want to read the few lines of that letter and we'll go on to the text after that. Swami writes in that, Shri Satya Sai Hostel Vrindavan, to Shri Satya Sai Hostel Vrindavan. That's how Swami has addressed it. And Swami says, my beloved teachers and boys, accept my love and blessings. In this world of change, we meet with various vicissitudes of life, both pleasant and unpleasant. We are afflicted with diseases both mental and physical. The body is stricken with diseases and the mind filled with worries. In this state of our unhappiness, turmoil and misery, there is only one way, and that is to take refuge in Sai. Sai alone can remove these difficulties and diseases and bring us health, peace and prosperity. He who has got Sai's name on his lips is a Jivan Mukta, because continuous remembrance of Sai eliminates the ego sense and grants him the realization of his immortal changeless self. Name is a link between the devotee and Sai. It brings the devotee face to face with Sai and enables him to attain the knowledge of his oneness with Sai. With love, your Sai, your own Sai, Shri Satya Sai.
Wow.
So such a beautiful letter, and as I said, I don't know, this doesn't have a date, but must be in the early 80s, in Swami's own handwriting, and it's so specific, right? It's not like Swami wrote this saying that, you know, a few years down the line,
you'll have an epidemic.
Have an issue like this, and you need this letter, but the fear is universal, you know, whether it is a fear of a war, fear of an epidemic, or fear of an economic crisis, the fear is universal. Fear is an emotion which is independent of what is it, that which causes it. In the same way, faith is universal. It doesn't matter what causes the fear, but faith in Swami is universal, and that applies. And when you have the strength of that faith, I think it kind of insulates you from any kind of crisis. And today we have this crisis. Tomorrow, as I was saying, it would be wonderful if there is a virus that spreads when somebody takes a selfie. Imagine if a virus like that were to come. I'm sure that faith in Swami is going to protect us even from that.
You know, you were saying that fear is universal, faith is also universal. So we are left with two choices. Both of them are universal. Pick what you want. So we know that the answer should be faith, because none of us like fear. We don't want to live in fear. We want to pick faith. But how do you keep faith in trying circumstances like this? It's very interesting that a visitor who is there in the interview room alongside Hislop is asking us, Swami, a similar question on faith, but he's asking how to get enough faith for even meditation. See, this is why I say that we think based on our circumstance. You know, given our current circumstance, we think when such a pandemic is happening, when everyone is panicking, how do I get rid of that fear and hold on to faith? Now here you have somebody else asking, how do I have faith when I'm meditating? at this, you know, sitting in my position at this point in time, I just look at him and tell, what question you're asking, man? It's so easy. What is your problem having faith during meditation? You don't know. Come in this situation. But I think when possibly every, you know, all the dust settles, everything becomes fine, it eventually will. Swami has said n number of times, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. In fact, if I can take a little detour, that is the mantra that Swami said was given to the Pandavas. And I remember that scene was depicted in Bhagwan's presence, and that scene lasted 48 minutes. Imagine 48 minutes for one scene in a drama, not the whole drama. This was one scene in an 8-scene drama, and this scene itself lasted 48 minutes. It gives an idea about how much emphasis Swami wanted to place on the message being given in that scene. Because that scene was, in spirit, very much like our condition today, wherein all the Pandava brothers are lamenting how destiny or fate or bad luck or whatever it is, dharma, blaming different people, different circumstances, and saying we have been hammered down like this. They are at their lowest in life. No wealth, thrown out of the kingdom, nothing, no army, nothing. And you know, they are just by themselves in the forest, unable to feed even a wandering sage who comes by. And at such point in time, Yudhishthira remembers that Krishna had given me a message saying that when you are at your lowest, use this as a mantra that will help you come out. And what is that mantra? Because Yudhishthira says that I need that mantra right now because I am at the lowest. I just don't know. Everyone, all my brothers themselves are feeling that I have done everything wrong. And when he opens the message there, the mantra reads, this too shall pass. You know, it is so beautiful that this worst thing which you are thinking has come and afflicted you or inflicted you, and that's it. There is no getting out of it. Don't despair, because this too shall pass. The beauty of this mantra is this mantra can be said in the zenith, in the best of situations, and at the nadir, at the bottommost pit of situations. Because when it's at the best of situations, it helps us keep grounded and be humble. When you tell yourself, this too shall pass. Don't pride. Ma kuru dhana jana yauvana garvam. As Adi Shankaracharya said, don't pride yourself on your wealth, on your affluence, influence, everything, because in one second it can all be gone. And when we see that happening now, and when we despair, the same message comes back again saying, no, this too shall pass. That passed, this too shall pass. So don't, you be equanimous. This will go through up and down. And that is, you know, that is the message that Swami kept giving every now and then, that this too shall pass. So in the same way, when the visitor says how to get enough faith for even meditation, because there is no time, Swami replies, not true. We always have enough time to talk, visit the cinema, etc. There is certainly time for meditation. And then the visitor says, after meditation, there is a feeling of strength. Where does that power come from and what is its relation to meditation? And Swami replies, the power is from God. The relationship between God and the devotee is love. It is almost impossible to be aware of the relationship with God. God is the subtlest of the subtle, and the relationship with Him is of the same subtlety.
Right, as you said, you know, though what is being spoken of is meditation, I think it is, it can be applied even to prayer as such, right? Mm-hmm. Because the question that this visitor is asking is, Swami, how do we have enough faith? Because he's saying two things, you know, how do you develop faith for meditation? And he's saying that I don't have enough time. Which means you have a limited time and you will put aside time for meditation or prayer or bhajans only if you have faith that that works or that there is a value to it or that brings something, right? Mm. It's just like, you know, how do we go about spending our time? You know, we always invest in things that we know will give a return, right? And Swami's answer to that, or in fact the answer that he himself has come up with, it, he says that after meditation you feel a certain strength, and actually that is the answer. And Swami would say that, you know, unless you try it out, you never know. And once you try it out, it is important to remember that, you know, this is something that makes you feel empowered. This is something that makes you feel hopeful. This is something which kind of lifts your spirits. And to remember it, because everything else is easier to remember, right? You know, everybody knows that money in hand is so tangible, right? When you when you put your time in trying to earn money, that money is very tangible. But this is something that only you know and only you can remind yourself. Only to a certain extent, Swami will tell that, you know, this is helpful. Do this, do bhajans, do namasmarana. After a certain point, I think we all have our own experience to fall upon, where we know that at times when we were low, at times when we needed help, just sitting and contemplating on Swami, or just, you know, playing a bhajan and listening to it, or to listen to a talk, or listen to, just see a few minutes of a Swami's video, we know what it does to us. And I think that is what will tell us, that is what is the faith in that particular activity. Because how else will you take up to meditation unless you try it and you know that it really does something?
When you say that there is no time to do something, it's only a matter of priority.
Right.
It just means it's not in your priority list. Because irrespective of where we are, we find to do some things every day without fail because it's important for us. And, you know, these trying circumstances that we are in now actually act as a catalyst to help us remember our priorities. You know, one small example. Yesterday I met one of my classmates.
Mm-hmm.
His son studies in the Ishwaramma High School. And he said that the way they have been revising and studying in preparation for the exams, you just need to wake up the child in the middle of the night and the child is able to reel out answers. You know, that is the way they're preparing because this is the final exams. And you know, it's been drilled down into every child that it is so important. And this is not just the case. This is just a sample. I'm sure this happens in every education system across the world. And you know what? Yesterday, they simply say, go back home. All exams are cancelled. Because, yes, of the corona scare. And all will be promoted to the next class. Now, when that happens, suddenly you think, what was this exam that we were giving so much importance and hyping about? You know, we possibly cancelled going for a bhajan because you need to sit and study. We cancelled doing possibly suprabhatam because, you know, you study till late in the night and, you know, get up little so that you can study. This is from the perspective of a school child. You know, but when I look at my own perspective, you know, things have been going haywire. You have made your summer plans, you have made your bookings, you try to cancel the bookings because a lot of money is held up there. And then nobody is having money in hand because everybody is canceling. Everywhere there is a lockdown. So much, you know, so much of financial distress, so much of mental distress. Then there is also the medical distress. You feel that, oh God, I can't even go to the banks and, you know, fight it out possibly because God knows who is there. I want to avoid social distancing, all this. And I must confess that the past 1 week has been quite difficult on me, and surely it will be on everybody else as well. Last night, like, you know, like you said, it's not just about meditation. I didn't meditate, but last night I was really exhausted physically, more mentally, and I just said, Swami, I just don't know where all this is headed. I'm just going to forget about everything, Swami, and I'm going to listen to your stories. That's what I did. Went to YouTube, put on some satsangs, and listened. And you know what? Today, as I reread, you know, before our satsang, when we just went through, when he's saying there that after meditation, there's a feeling of strength, I just jumped and said, yes, this is true. Because today morning when I woke up, I was feeling so much good. I don't know how to say it. I was feeling so much more healthy, freed from all these. Because when I look at it, there was nothing. Actually, nothing has happened. I have not got coronavirus. Nothing has happened. We are coming to Radio Sai here. Yes, we are taking a lot of precautions. But things are going on. And yet, it was as if I have been struck by some of the greatest disaster. That is when, you know, I realized that, yes, there is the fear of the epidemic, but even bigger, there is an epidemic of fear that is just eating us from inside out. It's like termites within us. And while we take all our precautions for the epidemic to ensure that, you know, we don't catch that, I think we need to take a lot more precautions so that the fear doesn't eat us from within. And this is when I realized that, just even, you know, it was just one sentence. Swami, you take care. I don't know anything. I'm just going to listen to your stories. And I put on, and there was a satsang by Geeta Mohan Ram going on. I just heard it. It feels so strengthening. It feels so wonderful that anything that you humanly tried didn't help you in that manner. That just convinces me, yes, that is the power of God. Because humanly, I have tried everything. Positivity, mental techniques, this, that, everything. Nothing seemed to work. I'm just feeling low and feeling bad, feeling sad. And then just this. And you know what? The stories that I heard yesterday are not connected to anything like this. Like, for instance, the letter that you read out now was a direct connection to the current situation. But the story of this, or the Bhagwan's experience that I heard, were not directly connected. And yet, they had that uplifting power. They had the thing to, you know, remove you out of that morass of fear and worry. And finally make you feel that, you know, Swami is there. Whatever it is, this too shall pass. I think that is the magic of meditation. And even those who say that they don't have time to meditate still say that when we find that time, it is so energizing. The problem is we need such sad and low situations only to turn to God. Otherwise, we don't turn to God. In fact, if we turn to God regularly as a sadhana, that is why the importance of personal sadhana, I think we'll never fall into this morass of fear and worry.
And I think message is also there. You know, I was speaking to one of our brothers from Australia. He was saying that, I'm being forced to work from home. I've been sent away. I can't, there are no events in the Sai Center. And he said that I'm catching up with all the satsangs which I've missed out all this while, and, you know, listening to all the audio talks.
Mm.
You know, what he said was very important. See, if you have not been inclined in that manner to, you know, even as this person is asking here, I want to meditate, I don't have time. If it's true, it cannot be true. Swami is kind of shooting it down right away. But let's say it's true that your job and your work at home, everywhere, is kind of consuming you completely, and you don't have time to listen to anything or read or, you know, participate in any of these activities. But let's say you genuinely have that desire. I think if you have that inclination, a moment like this, when you allowed a little bit of time to yourself, I think automatically you will gravitate towards satsang. You will gravitate towards reading things which will keep you focused on Swami. Otherwise, you will gravitate towards fear, because you have been running all the while. And if you are allowed to stop and keep quiet, your mind is running now. You know, you can't physically move about, but your mind is running. Your mind is in fear. Your mind is, you know, the palpitation is happening in your mind, even though your body is still. So I think that is what is important. You cannot wake up one day and prepare yourself for an emergency. And at the same time, if you're prepared all the time, you will never face an emergency. There is no situation which will give you the scare of an emergency. I think that is what probably all these situations is teaching us. And always focus on Swami. Always make Swami a part of your life, as Swami is saying here. In fact, the next question is that the visitor asked, Swami said that meditation twice a day is best.
Mm.
And then Swami says, early morning is best. You know, at least early morning once a day. It's almost like that. Swami says that mind is quiet and there is not the pressure of responsibilities. And then Hislop adds, is meditation from time to time during the day all right? And Swami says, there is difficulty during the day. People are around and there is work. If meditation is attempted, even work suffers. So here Swami is acknowledging that yes, sometimes you don't have time for meditation and prayer, because Swami himself is saying that during the day it's difficult because you have responsibilities to attend to. But that making it a discipline of one's life in the early morning or whatever, evening bhajans or whatever it is, to make this a part of your routine will go a long way, especially when, you know, you're faced with such vicissitudes of life, as Swami said. And I think a situation like this should make us remember it. As you said, this too shall pass. But after this passes, the wisdom should not get washed away.
It should not pass.
It should not pass with it. The wisdom should stay with us, and, you know, we change our lifestyles accordingly.
You know, dear listeners, I just want to add one more point. Like Prem said, this is like a preparation for a war. It's no use sharpening our arrows when the enemy is at the gates. That's how it is said. That's why it is said, prepare, build your defenses, build everything throughout. You know, whether it is even immunity booster. Now they're saying if you're more immune, it's better. So what do we do from now on? From the last 1 week, every morning I'm squeezing a lemon into water and drinking it because, you know, vitamin C. Correct. It's better if we are able to do this as a part of our day-to-day life. If we take in good food, they say, you know, good food, proper sleep at night, you know, not affected by watching late night movies or thinking and doing all the other things, sleeping early, rising early, eating good healthy food regularly, all this builds immune system. So one might think that now that I'm facing the virus, what is the use of now? Now will it help? It will help now also. yes, it's not possibly as effective of me having done it throughout my life, but even now if I start sleeping on time, eating good healthy food, and you know, practicing all this, it helps. Definitely it's better than not doing anything. In the similar manner, this has been my finding, that even if possibly on a daily basis I'm not doing sadhana, when this current situation comes, whatever little time I spend in listening to satsang, thinking of Swami, yes, it builds in me the resolve that I must do it in all good times as well. But even that last minute effort is also helping. Last night is the example, because really compared to last night to now, I am feeling so much more good knowing Swami is with me. And guess what, Prem? The minute my focus changed to Swami, suddenly, whether it's my WhatsApp, whether it's my Facebook, whether it's my mails, there has been a blast of Swami, Swami, Swami things coming. Till yesterday, it was a blast of Corona, this, that, this, what's happening in the world, all the impact of Corona that kept flooding me. Suddenly, it has changed. For me, in my world, suddenly it has shifted. It has shifted from Corona to Sai. Sai Karuna, you know, Corona to Karuna, it has shifted. So I feel that's how it is. We change our own little world. And so I want to tell our listeners that if you're wondering that I have not done it so far, no, last minute I'm going to do. Last minute also helps. It helps. Start right now and you will see the effects by tomorrow morning itself.
Right. Absolutely. And should we go further in the thing?
Yes. We can just complete this meditation right. Part where a visitor is asking.
Right. So visitor further asked this question. What is meditation? And Swami answers, real meditation is getting absorbed in God as the only thought, the only goal. God only, only God. Think God, breathe God, love God. And the visitor further asks, what about concentration? Swami replies, concentration means when all senses fall away and there is only God. The concentration of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa was naturally so strong that he grew something of a tail when meditating on Hanuman, the monkey. His body was just a changing bubble. His concentration was so strong. Special work on concentration need not be a part of meditation. Concentration is already in force wherever mind, intelligence and senses are used. Without it, you could not even walk. It needs no special practice. It is below the senses. Meditation is above the senses.
It becomes very, very clear over here, you know, that it's not our imagination, it is very real. Swami is giving an example of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, who developed a tail like a monkey when he was meditating on Hanuman. So intense was his thought on Hanuman that he developed a tail. We possibly do not have that amount of concentration and focus, that if I meditate on Hanuman, I will get a tail. But I think the message is very clear that what we think on, what we think about, what we focus on, to whatever extent we are able to focus. You know, our focusing capacities may vary. I may be 1, somebody may be a 10, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa is 100. But to the extent of my focusing, that much I am influencing my own life. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa grew a tail. I mean, it's unimaginable normally. But that is recorded in history. And here we have Swami, the avatar, telling us, which clearly shows that our thoughts definitely affect us. That is why it is so, so important what we focus our thoughts on and what we think about.
Right, and Swami is of course explaining the whole thing in conjunction with meditation.
Hmm.
And Swami has said this many times, in fact, further in the discussion, Swami is going to talk about the third word that Swami would often use, contemplation. But here Swami is speaking about meditation, and one of the reasons Swami would often debunk the various practices of meditation is invariably they stop at this point of concentration. And Swami would say that actually you don't need meditation techniques to improve your concentration. Swami would say that even doing your duty, even doing your everyday duty, you know, you're a doctor, you're a mother, you're a, you know, whatever it is, your profession, to do that profession diligently itself will improve your concentration, because without that you can't do anything.
Mm.
Even if you're going to stitch a button into a shirt, you can't do that without concentration and without focusing there. And we know what happens when you start concentrating. Actually, the world around kind of blurs, right? You're able to one-pointedly look at what you're doing. So Swami says you don't need that, but what you need it for is meditation, which is beyond the senses. Right? That is the point where literally you detach your mind from the world. And that is the state that we're talking about, as I think we must have given this example earlier too when Swami spoke about meditation, of Swami explaining it through the simple act of offering a rose. Mm. So Swami would say that you want to go to the garden and pluck a rose. You know that a rose bush has a lot of thorns. So if you want to pluck that rose, you first have to look at the rose and be careful not to run a thorn into your hand. And that calls for concentration, Swami would say. And when you're able to concentrate like that, and when you're able to pluck a rose, now you're actually removing the rose from its surroundings. You know, the act of plucking is you're detaching it from the bush it is a part of. So that act of separating what you're concentrating on from the surroundings, Swami says, is contemplation.
Wow.
And then finally, when you go and offer it in front of Swami, it is no more even part of your hand. You're not even holding it, right? So Swami says that which is contemplated upon, the one who contemplated, and the contemplation itself merges into one. Swami is saying that is what happens when you offer it to God. So that, I think that's the point Swami is saying here. It's God and only God, and you're concentrating only on God, and nothing else is taking your time.
At this point in time, dear listeners, I think we will take a quick little break, and on the other side of the break, continue this discussion. The discussion further goes, and Swami makes it very, very clear how long we need to meditate and what is the way to realize that the object of our meditation is achieved. All those things coming up after this little break.
कदम हो साई तुम हो मेरे हम नवा तेरे बिना ना रह सकूं तेरे बिना ना जी सकूं मेरी दुनिया तू ही तू है कैसे जीऊं तेरे बिन कैसे जीऊं तेरे बिन जीवन हो तुम जीवन हो तुम जीवन हो तुम जीवन सत्य साई तेरा ही घर है मेरी अखियां है तेरा द्वार दिल ये मेरा तेरा ही घर है मेरी अखियां है तेरा द्वार मैं कहां हूं सब तू ही है कैसी कलियां जीवन हो तुम जीवन हो तुम जीवन हो तुम जीवन सत्य साई बातें सुख बरसाए और कुछ दिल चाहे ना। तेरी बातें सुख बरसाए और कुछ दिल चाहे ना। तेरा दर्शन मन महकाए और कुछ भी भाए ना। मेरे हम सफर हो, मेरे हम कदम हो, साई तुम हो मेरे हमनवा, हमनवा, हमनवा। तेरे बिना ना रह सकूं, तेरे बिना ना जी सकूं। मेरी दुनिया तू ही तू है, कैसे जीऊं तेरे बिन, कैसे जीऊं तेरे बिन। जीवन हो तुम, जीवन हो तुम, जीवन हो तुम, जीवन सत्य साई। जीवन हो तुम, जीवन हो तुम, जीवन हो तुम, जीवन सत्य साई। जीवन हो तुम, जीवन हो तुम, जीवन हो तुम, जीवन सत्य साई, जीवन सत्य साई, जीवन सत्य साई।
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were discussing about a conversation that Hislop and a visitor are having with Swami regarding meditation, especially the visitor. And when he asks about meditation, Swami says real meditation is about getting absorbed in God, thinking only about God. The visitor then says, what about concentration? And Swami replies that concentration happens when senses fall away and there is only God. And Swami gives the example of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, whose concentration was so strong that he grew a tail while meditating on Hanuman. You know, as we discussed before going into the break, whatever we focus upon seems to manifest itself in our physical life to the extent of our focus and concentration. So that was the thought we left you with when we went in, that when that is true, irrespective of our extent of focusing ability, why don't we focus on things that we would want in our life? Actually, if we look at the things that we focus on in our lives, especially now, let us think in the current pandemic scenario, we are always focusing on things that we don't want in our lives. We are thinking about the deaths, we are thinking about, you know, how it will affect life and what will happen, and we are in fact extrapolating. That is the reason why we have panic attacks, hysteria, toilet paper running out, supplies running out, all this happening because, not because anything has happened now, but because we have extrapolated it. That is the power of the mind. The mind is infinitely powerful in extrapolating, and we have extrapolated it all in the negative direction, thinking of the worst possible scenario. I was just reading news of how people are buying firearms because they are scared that one supply run out, people will attack. You know, that is the level of extrapolation that has gone on. One empty shelf in the grocery store has led you to think about how people will attack your homes to raid whatever groceries you have, and that's why you are now buying guns. Is it any surprise that there is so much of fear and worry, anxiety in us? In fact, I was listening to a discourse the other day where Swami says that such worry and fear affect your immunity system. In fact, we are becoming more susceptible to the coronavirus by doing all this. So it shows very clearly that where we focus our thoughts on, what we think about, affects us in our day-to-day life in reality. Why not focus on the good things in life? And I think that is where possibly we can think of a new kind of meditation called, you know, maybe gratitude meditation. Can I get up in the morning and think of 10 things that I'm grateful for and thankful for? We don't do this at all. We don't do this at all. Possibly we get up and the first thing in the morning we look at the newspaper or something and think of 10 things that we are complaining about. Can we reverse that? Can we break that trend and instead wake up in the morning and think of 10 things we are grateful about?
I think even as we are talking about gratitude, I think we'll just read this next passage, because the idea of meditating on any of these emotions, I think, comes in what Swami is saying here. Because Swami says, in between concentration and meditation, like a separation between the two, is contemplation. Concentration to contemplation, then meditation. As long as one thinks I am meditating, that is the mind, and is not meditation. As long as one knows he is meditating, he is not meditating. In that absorption in God, one puts aside every form and merges into God. In that process, the mind naturally stops. The reason why I was saying this is, you know, as you can clearly say, when you talk about concentration is something that you consciously do when you're trying to focus on something, or even when you concentrate on a mantra, or when you're concentrating on a particular form. Swami would say contemplation is when you, to a certain extent, do it more spontaneously. You literally, your mind gets unhinged, and you just, that's why Swami would say, always speak about japa and dhyana. When Swami would say that when you have a form that you love, when you have a name that you adore, the contemplation does not need to be forced. You don't have to force yourself to concentrate on that. And similarly, when you're talking about any contemplation or any meditation on an emotion, that I want to be grateful for what I have, I want to be, or something like a visualization meditation, as they would say, the law of attraction, you kind of concentrate on a state in the future which you feel is going to be probably more pleasant than now. It is a way by which you're actually contemplating on something. You're trying to simulate that in your mind, and there is enough proof that changes a lot of things inside, the way the body reacts to that situation itself. Because everything is a stimuli, if you really look at it. You know, when you talk about fear, when you talk about stress, as you said, fear leads to a loss of immunity. That's a very simple science. In fact, when we spoke about the science behind stress, we have spoken about it. Because the mind thinks that, okay, these are not essential processes in the body right now, let's shut it out. So you kind of you're simulating that idea in your mind, and the mind kind of switches off those things in the body. In the same manner, when you are trying to visualize gratitude, the body also kind of responds to that. And you know, the body is at the best health possible. Your mind is much, much more cheerful and is ready to react to the situation, or rather respond to the situation rather than react. So all of that comes with that contemplation, as you rightly said, of positive. Of course, when we talk about Swami and gratitude, the contemplation we're talking of is a little more sublime than this. But it is helpful even in a situation like this, even when you're talking about contemplating on the better things in life, which we have right now too.
The interesting thing is, I told you yesterday I started listening to some satsang, and especially one by Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram. Very interestingly, in that satsang, she begins by telling, Swami in an interview told her, there are 9 steps to be traveled to reach Swami. And she in fact took out and started making mental notes, even writing a few points in her diary, because she said, this will be a good subject for a talk. And now I'm seeing the wisdom in that, because she made an awesome talk on that. Not one, multiple times she has spoken on that. And now we are borrowing that and, you know, using that. So it is leading to a kind of a positive chain reaction. There, right now I'm not able to remember all the 9 steps. But I clearly remember the first 3 steps, because that is what I've heard in the talk so far. So in that she says, Swami said that the first step is gratitude. You know, it is so stunning, because when it was said that 9 steps, that to 9 of them, I was almost 100% sure that Swami is going to tell Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, you know, that is the 9 steps we have always heard of. And Atmanivedanam is ultimate merger in Swami, becoming one with Swami. Interestingly, here also the 9th step is that only, becoming one with Swami. But I just felt that Swami has given possibly a practical extrapolation to Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam by giving this, saying that the first step is gratitude, and the second step is that gratitude leads you to be humble. Humility is the second step, and the third step from that comes that you are humble and therefore you are egoless. And you know, before I go further, I just want to tell what Swami told her also, because she goes back and makes a note of all these, and she's forgetting one or two points in between. So the next day she comes back and she wants to clarify with Swami also, Swami, what are those 2 points? Could you please repeat, because I need it. Swami repeats it for her and then tells, what? Are you going to tell it in this manner? First is gratitude, then humility. No, that's not nice. You should not speak like that. You should tell gratitude and then you should give an example. You should tell a story. And then you should tell humility and then tell a story. And that is so beautiful because the whole talk that I heard yesterday was about a story of gratitude. And it shows how important gratitude is. One, because Swami himself has said that that is the first step towards reaching him. Like you said, there are only two major, if I can say, emotions or things that we are influenced by. One is either fear or love. We are either influenced by fear or by love. And that love is the divine love. And Swami says the only way to reach that, to overcome fear and to reach this, is to start with gratitude. And it's a bit of a long story possibly, but I have to narrate it because Swami makes Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram experience this in a way, and then next day points out and tells her that this is a story you can use for gratitude. So here is the story in as briefly as I can say it. So there was this person called Mr. Dasharatha Ramareddy, who in the 1950s used to supply milk to the few households that stayed behind the Prashanti Mandir. You know, they were just in where the south one Prashanti exists today. There were about 10 cottages or 10 houses, and it would be let out by Swami to different people, and Geetaram Mohan Ram's family with her father and mother, everyone, that used to be one of them. So he would every day come and ask everybody for what was their requirement of milk and supply them with those pots of milk. There were no milk packets. But make no mistake, he was not a milk seller. He held a very high government position in Andhra Pradesh. But this was the seva that he used to do for Swami. And his wife, her name unfortunately is not mentioned. Let's call her Mrs. Dasharatha Ram Reddy. So his wife used to make garlands for Swami. And those days many people were allowed to garland Swami. So morning, afternoon, evening, and late evening before Swami retires, somebody or the other would keep garlanding Swami, and she took great joy in making garlands for Swami. So this is the introduction of the lady. Why this lady needs to be introduced is because after Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram got her first interview with Bhagwan, where Swami said the ninefold path, starting with gratitude, she walks out and she finds this Mrs. Dasharatha Ram Reddy sitting there. And she looks at Geeta Mohan Ram and says, hey, come here, I have to share something with you. I'm so happy, you must come home, I must tell you something. Now, this elderly lady was usually not an excitable kind of character, kind of personality. And Ms. Geeta Mohan Ram was surprised to see her so excited.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt that because, you know, she had recently, she felt that possibly she has recently had some experience with Swami that she wants to narrate, and she was right. Because that evening when she goes home, she says, let me take you back 1 month before something amazing happened. I must tell you, it's very, very strange. And so she says that. So what happened is, one evening, as she's about to, you know, wind up for the day, there's a knock on the door. She opened the door. There are two people in white. And she gathers that they are possibly students of Bhagwan. And they're saying that, you must come with us right now to Vrindavan. Why? Because Swami has said that we should get you. So she says, what do you mean Swami told him to get me? Where? No, no. No, Swami said in West so and so, this only. So it is you only, and he said there's a lady, and so therefore we want to take you. No, she said that for 20 years Swami had not spoken to her. So she got scared that, no, you might have made a mistake. It definitely cannot be me, because I've had no interaction at all with Swami. You know, just to remember, Swami at this point in time was in Vrindavan. So, it cannot be that Swami has called me from Prashantilam to Vrindavan. You are mistaken. So, despite the boy's best efforts, she drove them off and said, no, I am not coming. I am not coming with you. No way. Now, the boys reach Vrindavan and Swami is waiting for them and asks, did you get her? And she says, no, Swami, she is not ready to come. Now, Swami gives them a dose and says, Swami, what did you do? You can't follow one small thing. I told you to go and get. You didn't get her. What did you tell her? Swami, we said that you have told this West so-and-so, that block, you're there. Swami said, did you tell her that she is the wife of Dasharatha Ram Reddy? Oh, no, Swami, we didn't. Tell her that, no, tell her and call her by name. So the name was not revealed, so I don't remember the name. so I don't know the name, but Swami said, you should tell her name and tell Swami told his name, then only. Oh, okay, Swami. And guess what? Though it is almost night now, Swami tells, go start back now, call her and get her back. And they again start back. So this lady says that early in the morning at 4 o'clock there's a knock on the door and she opens and these two fellows are again there. They're telling, madam, you only, you have to please come, please, please. And they start forcing her and they say, you are Mrs. Dasharatha, I'm ready, no? She says, huh? Swami remembered you. Swami said this and Swami said, you should come. She says, okay, give me 2 minutes. So she rushes in quickly. She says she put 2 saris into one bag, into one kind of a shoulder bag and walked out and said, how do we go now? So there was a car and they left. And she says, throughout the journey, I kept chanting Sai Gayatri, telling Swami, these people are taking, please, please don't get upset with me. She's saying, I was scared that Swami has given me a place to stay in Prashanti. I'm leaving Prashanti and going. And I just want to say that, Swami, you have called, that's why I've come. And that she reaches, and morning darshan, Swami comes straight to her and tells, oh, you have become a big lady here. Huh? Swami has to invite you two times to come. She says, no, Swami, you have not spoken to me for 20 years. I didn't know, that's why, I didn't know why you are calling me, but I have come. Swami says, you know why I called you? I called you because I want to take you along with me to Kodaikanal that year. And immediately her thought is, oh my God, I brought only 2 saris. How do I last a Kodaikanal trip? And look at Swami's love and compassion. And this is only Swami can do, I think, because he knows the innermost thoughts. After the darshan session, she is accosted by Ratanlal aunty. And Ratanlal aunty says, Swami has told me to take you to Bangalore to buy saris for you. And she says that for 10 days, she got to know it was going to be a 10 to 15 day trip. And for that, she was bought 10 to 15 Kanjivaram silk saris to wear, along with all the accessories required. And finally, she was also bought a big suitcase to pack the whole thing in. And they came back in the evening loaded with all this stuff. Swami was very happy. Swami told her, you know what? We are going by flight. We are first going to go to Madurai. And from Madurai, we'll be going to Kodaikanal. Have you traveled in a flight? She said, no, Swami. And so, she had a beautiful Kodaikanal visit. And they came back. And after returning, this was when the darshans in Vrindavan were going on. And she had continued to stay there because she had accompanied Swami to Kodaikanal. She said that, Swami has said that when he is going back to Prashanti, I should accompany him back to Prashanti. But she says, see, Geeta, for 20 years, Swami didn't speak to me at all. I never expected this so much. I am so happy. Every day I keep crying, thinking of him only. I just don't know what is this. And so this was what had happened. The next day is the day when Ms. Geeta Mohan Ram is going and she also tells Swami, can you repeat because I need to note down. During that interview, she was unable to bear it any, hold it within. She just said, Swami, yesterday I met Mrs. Dasharatha Ram Reddy. Oh my God, what an experience it was. And Swami tells her, she is very excited. You know why? Because she traveled in plane for first time. That's why she's so excited.
Not because she came with me.
Then Ms. Geeta Mohan Ram says, no, Swami, she was shedding tears thinking of you so much. And you know, on behalf of her, she just says, Swami, why you didn't speak to her for 20 years, Swami? Swami said, I did not do that because I wanted her to grow and reach that yearning. For 20 years, you know, constantly she has chanted my name and thought of me. And that is why after that, now I have rewarded her. And she said, oh, wow. Swami said, I remember everything. You know, what is very special about her? Very beautiful. Swami said, what is special about her is, she made hundreds of garlands for me. Do you know, not even one she has offered to me? She was so happy seeing it being offered. Her own husband has offered. So many people she would make and she would derive great delight in just watching Swami wearing the garland. That kind of selfless seva she has done. So I said, you know why I actually took her to Kodaikanal? Because I wanted to tell my thank you to her. I wanted to offer my gratitude to her. And that is the reason I wanted to show to my boys that you have to offer gratitude. And as my offering of gratitude, I did this to her. And Ms. Geeta Mohan Ram was saying, what a repayment it was, what a debt of gratitude it was, because her life was changed. She says she was in bliss now, totally blissed out. It was, you know, Swami waits for the perfect time. It was a culmination of her 20 years of sadhana, of namasmarana, and then this gratitude and her selflessness, nothing goes unnoticed. And when Swami gives that, it is a permanent bliss. She was totally blissed out. And the most beautiful thing is, Swami said, now for example, in your gratitude, you can use this story. So I just felt that when we speak of gratitude, we should also use this story. And here it is.
Right. Absolutely. I think there are so many such sweet stories where, you know, this is one thing which probably you always remember when you speak about Swami, that nothing goes unnoticed. Right. When somebody once asked me, what is it that you literally learned as a Swami student? This is one thing. Nothing absolutely goes unnoticed. If you've done anything for Swami, if you've done anything selflessly, it is not that, not to make one greedy for reward. But with Swami, if you ever think that Swami, I've done so much, what is it? You know, it never happens like that, as one of the old students was once telling.
Mm.
And again, going back to Kodai trips, and I think it was a time when Swami used to go to Ooty every summer. So Swami was going to Ooty, and Swami told this boy that, you know, you don't come with me, you stay here, because his parents were here. He was hoping that, because he's a local boy in that sense, all others are forced to go back to vacation unless Swami is planning to take them. So this boy was by default here, and he thought that when Swami goes to Vrindavan and Ooty, he'll be taken by default. And when Swami was leaving, Swami calls him and Swami says, no, you stay here, you know, because you're a bhajan singer and we need a bhajan singer in the month. So you stay here. And Swami went away. And as the summer progressed, it became warmer and warmer. It was unbearable. And he was saying that I had to go for morning Nagar Sankirtan, morning bhajans, evening bhajans. And of course, apart from that, any other work in the ashram, you'll be called for that. And, you know, all of this is not what makes you suffer the summer. But the fact that Swami and some students are there in Ooty and Kodaikanal or Vrindavan, you know, that thought makes you suffer more. You know, I am not part of that group. And you're missing out. And you're saying that it got to a point I couldn't take it any further. So I wrote a letter and I sent it off to Swami, saying that, Swami, why are you torturing me like this? And, you know, do you know how unbearable the summer is and all of that? You know, impulsively he wrote the letter and he sent it off. And promptly, a couple of days later, he gets a call from Vrindavan. Swami has come back to Vrindavan, and Swami calls, I think, the secretary of the ashram or somebody, and asks this boy to come to Vrindavan. So he says, oh God, what have I got myself into now? So he goes to Swami, and Swami calls for an interview, and as though nothing has happened, Swami inquires him about everything in Bharti. And very casually, Swami asked him, Parthi chellaga unda? Swami says, is it cold and pleasant in Parthi? And he was like, that was the tipping point, you know. He said, no, Swami, it's very hot. And then, you know, very sweetly, Swami says, I don't torture anybody. Swami says, don't ever think like that. Swami does not get any joy out of that. Swami tortures nobody. And then something Swami said was so profound, and Swami, you know, very forcefully and very with lot of meaning, Swami said it. Swami said, whatever you are doing to Swami, remember, yenchi yenchi istanu. Swami said, I will count every bit and I will give it back to you. Don't ever think that what you do for Swami goes waste. And that boy, you know, later looking at, remembering this incident, he said that thereafter in his career, there are many, many times where he actually got rewards which he did not deserve, right? Success or profits, which was like, in no way you are supposed to be getting that, you know.
Mm.
The kind of turnovers and everything was like inflated. And every time something like that happened, he would say that, I remember those words of Swami. Swami said, yenchi yenchi istanu. And, you know, that is the beauty. In fact, if you really look at it, this is what is referred to as adrishtam. Right, adrishta in Sanskrit means luck.
That which is not seen.
Right, but actually it is that which is not seen. Mm. It's a reward for something that you don't know when you've done it and you're seeing it. Right, and gratitude is that. And the change in attitude, if you really look at it, you know, today if something goes wrong, you're able to say that I'm grateful for this. You know, so many people are sick around and I'm not sick. I'm happy for this. Or so many people are economically hit because of the situation. You know, thankfully Swami has provided me enough buffer, so I'm happy. You're actually looking for gratitudes which kind of show up or shine in times of gloom. But the attitude of gratitude that Swami would often speak of is, you have enough to be grateful of. You know, gratitude should be your base emotion. Right? Every morning you can wake up and there are 1,000 things you can be grateful for. Then things which probably hurt you or things which probably you know, you're sad for, you're unfortunate about, those become things that stand out. Right? Today it's the other way around. You know, we are moaning and pining and complaining constantly, and one or two things which kind of shine, we are saying that I'm happy for this. I think what is required is a change in the idea that you contemplate on how much you have for grateful for. So once in a while when you're upset, it's so easy to get over it because you have enough to be thankful for.
Dear listeners, at this point in time, we'll take another quick little break as you listen to the song that is being played. Of course, you can take some time out to quickly write down one or two things that you are grateful for in your life. Believe us, just writing it down and thinking about it itself will start improving your day right now. Welcome back, dear listeners. Just before we went into the break, we had a discussion on gratitude, and it was triggered off with we wanting to focus our energies on something that is beautiful and good. Now here is what Swami had said regarding concentration, contemplation, meditation. Brother Prem read it out. I'll just read it out once again quickly. In between concentration and meditation, like a separation between the two is contemplation. Concentration to contemplation and then meditation. As long as one thinks that I am meditating, that is the mind and it's not meditation. As long as one knows he is meditating, he is not meditating. In that absorption in God, one puts aside every form and merges into God. In that process, the mind naturally stops. You know, when I read this prema, I was reminded of my own efforts some nights when I try to sleep. It happens that some night, especially when you break your normal sleep cycle and keep awake later than usual, instead of feeling extra tired, which you will, I think, feel the next day actually, that night suddenly you become wide awake. Let's say that you're used to sleeping every night by 9:30 or 10 o'clock. You keep awake till 11:30 or 12. At 12, suddenly you see that you're no longer feeling sleepy. And I've had this happen to me at times. And at that time when I look at the clock, I see half an hour has passed, 45 minutes has passed, 1 hour has passed, and I've not got sleep at all. That is when I get a little panicky because the next day morning I have to get up. I have to get up in time. So I keep telling myself, Arvind, sleep now, sleep, sleep, sleep fast, sleep, sleep. You have to sleep now, you have to sleep. And I focus all my energies on trying to sleep. You know, I try all the techniques. They say counting the sheep, I count. I try to chant Sai Gayatri, I chant Om Shri Sai Ram. And then I suddenly look, another half an hour has passed, I'm still not asleep. I make so much of effort, you know. And then finally, at one point, you almost like give up, like, I'm not able to make me sleep. And then you just start thinking some random stuff and you don't even know when you actually drifted off to sleep till you wake up next morning and it's like, hey, I got a sleep. I feel it's almost like that, you know, when, because I have not that, I have not had that experience in meditation, but reading what Swami is saying here about concentration, contemplation, meditation, that's what it is. It's like, as long as you're focusing intensely and trying to sleep, you're not sleeping. In fact, it is preventing you from sleeping because sleep is a stage that's beyond the senses. The senses have to switch off. So as long as you're consciously putting in effort, it's not happening. But possibly that effort is required to tire you out and, you know, make you surrender in a way. Because that's what happens with regards to sleep. You finally surrender and like, that's it, man, I'm not getting sleep. Let's see what happens. And you just leave it and maybe that kind of surrender comes in. I don't know. I'm just guessing over here. But it's very clear that as long as you know that you're trying to sleep, you're making efforts to sleep, you're trying sleeping techniques, you are not sleeping. In the same way, when you're trying meditation techniques, you're trying to meditate, putting efforts, you know that it's not meditation.
Right, and you know, one of the old friends was once saying that they were sitting in the bhajan hall and Swami one day came and he was talking to all of them, you know, how Swami would stand and talk for long times there. So Swami is standing there and suddenly Swami asked this question. He said, how many of you meditate? So this student was saying that all the seniors in the hostel knew that that was a trap question. You never answer that question.
So, don't raise your hand.
Right, so everybody kept quiet. You know, they all had the habit of, because Swami would say Jyoti meditation and all that. So they all had the habit of in their own way meditating. And we all know that sitting for 3 hours in the mandir, by default at some point in time you start trying to, you know, at least close your eyes and chant something. We've all done that at some point in time. Because, you know, as somebody said, you don't have anything else to do. You have to occupy yourself with your own mind and, you know, you end up meditating. But they knew that when Swami asked this question, you don't answer to that. So everybody kept quiet. So there was this one first year boy in that, you know, the pure innocent one, he lifted his hand. And everybody was saying that gone, no, this fellow is gone. So Swami looked at him and very pleasantly, Swami said, oh, you do meditation, very good and all that. And he felt even more enthused and encouraged to, you know, further indulge with Swami. And Swami said, when do you do meditation? So he said, Swami, in the morning I wake up at 5 o'clock and I do. Swami said, very nice, very happy. And then Swami said, how long do you do meditation? And very triumphantly this boy said, Swami, for 20 minutes every day. 20 minutes you do? Swami asked. He said, yes, Swami, 20 minutes. And then came the, you know, the googly. Swami said, if you know that you do meditation for 20 minutes, then it's not meditation at all. Because you'll lose the sense of time and space. That's the whole idea of meditation, as Swami was explaining here. Right? But nevertheless, it's the same Swami who just a while ago, Swami said that, you know, early morning sitting in meditation is good. And then later, and I think earlier also in the conversation, Swami said many times, fix a time. In fact, I think today Science Fair's Swami was saying that fix a time and stick to that time every day and do meditation. I think it's the parallel is very, very clear with that of sleeping and with that of doing meditation. We have discussed about deep sleep many times on the show earlier also. The deep sleep is actually for 1.5 hours or 2 hours maximum. But for that 2 hours of sleep, there is a preparation for that. You know, you switch off all the lights, you go to bed, you cover yourself with a blanket, you kind of make that ambience around you, and you as you said, you force yourself to sleep. You know, I close my eyes and I ensure that I sleep. And in those 6-7 hours that you're, so to say, sleeping for the world, you're actually truly sleeping for 2 hours. And I think it's the same with meditation too, that if you keep aside those 20 minutes every day, probably a few seconds in that 20 minutes, you will really be lost in meditation. And it does happen, you know, sometimes when you're completely lost, you think that you've been sitting there for a very long time and it's probably just a few minutes. Or it's the other way around. You think it's just a few minutes that's gone by and then it's much longer than you've been sitting there. So those are the moments, real moments that you lose in meditation. So one thing is understand that. It's not that every time you close your eyes, it's meditating. And it is necessary to sit down and close your eyes if you really want to meditate too.
And you need an object of meditation. Because, you know, one of my classmates who had gone for a meditation course where you're taught to meditate on nothing was coming and telling me that it is so hard to meditate on nothing. Because you just close your eyes, you get hundreds of things. How do you meditate on nothing? And I was showing him a discourse where Swami is saying that meditating is like riding a bicycle. And to ride a bicycle, you need to hold the handlebars, two sides, both sides. And Swami said, one side is the name of the Lord, one side is the form of the Lord. When you are focusing your concentration, when it seems to drift away from the name of the Lord, let it drift to the form of the Lord. When it's drifting away from the form of the Lord, let it drift to the name of the Lord. So Swami said, this is how you need to meditate. And when this was, you know, when I showed him this, he was so thrilled and said, wow, this makes so much sense. Because, you know, meditating on nothing is just impossible. I've spent 10 days and I couldn't do anything of it. You know, so Swami always says about meditating on the form and using the name and the form. And of course, the ultimate state is that state of nothingness where you are in that state of bliss. And that is what the visitor says, you know, because he's comparing the ultimate state to what we are doing in our so-called, in quotes, meditation practice. And he says, Baba says to cut off the divine form in meditation, but we are worshipping Swami's form. And Swami said, that is all right. But when one comes close to Baba, the visualization is abandoned. At this moment, you are looking at Baba directly. Are you visualizing? I think this is so clear now. You know, Swami tells him that, and this is our experience also. When we are doing bhajans, when we are doing any sadhana at home, we close our eyes and think of Swami, his eyes, his leg, everything. But when we are sitting for darshan, we are not closing our eyes and visualizing, we are just seeing Swami. And it's effortless. And what are we doing? We are just seeing Swami, that's all. That's it, there's no visualization happening. So Swami is saying that, when that happens, once you have Swami walking in front of you, you don't need to visualize Swami. You are seeing Swami directly. That is what Ramakrishna Paramahamsa tells Swami Vivekananda. I see God the way I am seeing you. Once you have reached that state, then you don't need to visualize and meditate. But till then you visualize. You need the name and the form. I think that's very beautiful. Because it's not like, now 10 years I have used the name and the form. Now I move to next grade where I give up the name and the form. It's not like that. Swami says, when you do that intensely enough, you will have the vision of God. And once you have the vision of God, you need not visualize God because you have the vision of God. So, we need not worry about when should we start, thinking of Swami and when should we stop thinking of nothing. Just focus, think of the name and the form of the Lord. And when the right time comes, you will not need because you will be seeing Him even with your eyes open.
Right. Indeed, that's one of the most beautiful explanations that Swami is giving here. In the sense that, You go to a point where, you know, as Swami was describing about meditation itself is a point where you go beyond the senses. And Swami would say, it's a point where the name and form do not matter to you. You go to a state where the state beyond name and form, and that's direct visualization. There you're directly seeing Swami. There is no effort in that. As so beautifully Swami is drawing the parallel between when Swami was, you know, in front of us. You know, that you don't need to meditate. You know, when you're sitting there for Swami's darshan, we did not have to meditate. He was there. We were able to see him. You were able to concentrate on the form which is right in front of you. And Swami is talking about that state of effortlessness more than anything else. And that effortlessness, you don't need a name and form, because it becomes a spontaneous state where you're concentrating on that, on Swami, without having a need for the name and form. Right? We do not stick to anything around. And I think this is something which Swami would often say, even when Swami is drawing a parallel to the time when we had the opportunity to physically sit in front of Swami. This is not to read this and say that, oh, that opportunity is gone. You don't. Swami is referring to a direct experience that you've had and the ability to draw all understanding from that direct experience, you know, connecting it back to whatever we are going through and all of that. We all have a direct experience of Swami's grace in some form or the other, you know, maybe at the time of an exam, at a time when a dear one was in the hospital, or, you know, at a time when you were involved in an accident. I think there is no devotee of Swami who can say that I have not experienced Swami's grace. That's impossible, honestly. And even as I'm saying this, if somebody is saying, no, I am a devotee of Swami and I have not experienced grace, it can only mean that you've had grace and you've probably not noticed it, or probably not acknowledged it enough. It's impossible. In fact, there are many, many devotees. The other day, I think we were discussing about this old student who was saying that he came to Swami as a student in Vrindavan. He became a student of in the graduate class. And that's when he started knowing Swami. He started becoming a devotee of Swami. So at one point, Swami calls him for an interview and Swami is talking to him. And all of a sudden, Swami starts recalling some incidents from his childhood at a time when Swami was never in the picture, right? And he was in the process of doing something absolutely silly. He was trying to run away from his house and things like that. And Swami started telling him, you know, you were trying to get away. You got into this bus and you were trying to go away from your house. And then an old man came and stopped you and brought you back home. And Swami asked, who is that old man? Right? At the point when you do not have Swami in your life to say that Swami's grace is there. Right? So which means that there are innumerable occasions in our life where we have experienced Swami's grace, we have not acknowledged it, or we have not noticed it. So Swami is saying that you draw your faith from that experience. As one student was once telling Swami, he said, Swami, we hear all kinds of things about Swami. You know, when you go out into the world, people say, oh, Sai Baba is doing all these miracles and these are all fake, and, you know, this magician can do that and this person can do that. Swami, what do we do? It kind of messes with our mind. The simple answer that Swami gave is, what does your experience say? And that kind of silences everything in the mind, because we have experienced it, right? So what Swami is telling here is, can you draw your faith and draw your strength from your own experience? And if we can do that, we don't need anything else, because Swami has been gracious enough to give each one of us that experience.
The time in our studios is almost 1:55, but I think before we conclude, we just read out two more lines so that we complete this topic on meditation, at least. The visitor says, what should I do? My meditation is the inquiry, who am I? And Swami says, the Ramana Maharshi inquiry by itself is not good. It must be combined with meditation. Meditation for its proper practice should be at the same place at the same time. In that way, it surely will be successful. If one is away from home and travel, in his mind he can go to the accustomed place no matter where he is. Now, before we conclude on this meditation, this is again a very, very important practical tip. Swami says it's very, very important that you do your meditation in the same place at the same time every day. That discipline you put in. In fact, I remember when we had to put up the convocation drama in the evening in Purnachandra Auditorium, the teachers who were guiding us said that let's practice a whole run. You know, we have scene-wise practice and the whole drama run practice. It was told that every day at 6 p.m. we'll have the whole drama run practice. And we were told that even if we are not good actors, when we practice our scenes every day at the same time, you know, whether it's emotionally crying or being happy or joyous, whatever that the drama requires from us, for 21 days if we do it, we will get into the habit of feeling those very emotions every day at 6 o'clock. And that was what was made. That was why we were made to do the group practice, the whole drama practice every day at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. Rest of the time it's individual practice. So that definitely was a technique that they had borrowed from Swami. And that's what Swami is saying here also. Same time, same place. In fact, Swami, you know, I think adding more importance to the visualization technique, Swami even says that by chance you are not in your same place where you meditate. In your mind, travel to that place and then begin your meditation. Wow, I had never heard of that thing before. This is something very special. So if I am used to doing my meditation at my home in my altar, tomorrow if I am on a travel, when I sit there for meditating at the same time, I need to mentally travel first to my altar and then do the meditation. On that note, dear listeners, actually it doesn't conclude here because there's a continuation, but we need to make our own kind of conclusions to finish a topic so that we stick within our schedule. So at this point in time, we will be stopping here. We will continue with this next week. Same place, same time, just like meditation. In the meanwhile, stay safe, stay fear-free, stay fearless, because Swami is there with us. Irrespective of what happens, like the eyelids protecting the eye, He is there protecting us, taking care of us. We need to take precautions, but we need not fear. We have Swami with us and He says, why fear when I am here? Thank you, dear listeners. We leave you now with this song, and on the other side of it, you'll be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
मेरा जीवन तेरे हवाले प्रभु इसे पग पग तू ही संभाले मेरा जीवन तेरे हवाले प्रभु इसे पग पग तू ही संभाले पग पग तू ही संभाले से हो पग पग तू ही संभाले पग पग तू ही संभाले से हो पग पग तू ही संभाले मेरा जीवन तेरे हवाले प्रभु से पग पग तू ही संभाले भवसागर में जीवन नैया डोल रही है ओ रखवैया भवसागर में जीवन नैया डोल रही है ओ रखवैया डोल रही है ओ रखवैया इसे पार तू ही लगा ले प्रभु इसे पग पग तू ही संभाले मेरा मेरा जीवन तेरे हवाले प्रभु से पग पग तू ही संभाले पग पग तू ही संभाले से हो पग पग तू ही संभाले मेरा जीवन तेरे हवाले प्रभु से पग पग तू ही संभाले भवसागर में जीवन नैया डोल रही है ओ रखवैया रही है है ओ रखवैया इसे पार तू ही लगा ले प्रभु इसे पग पग तू ही संभाले मेरा जीवन तेरे हवाले प्रभु इसे पग पग तू ही संभाले।